This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 33rd in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I am very pleased to have with me today Lori Williams. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
Lori Williams is an associate professor of computer science at North Carolina State University. She holds a PhD from Utah, an MBA from Duke, and a BS from Lehigh. Before returning to academia, Lori worked for IBM for 9 years. Lori's a star in the Agile community, writing books and founding conferences and leading research groups. Her lab at North Carolina State is called the Software Engineering Real Search Group. Lori lives with her family in North Carolina, surrounded by teenagers, Chris, Kimberly, and Brian. Totally surrounded, huh?
Yep.
So you spent 9 years at IBM before coming back to become a professor. And I'm wondering, how did your work in the commercial space drive or enhance your current research interests?
Yeah, I think it had a big impact on my research because I was attuned to what the problems of industry were. And so I was determined to have a practical nature to my research.
Hence the name.
Hence the name, that's right. And so when I was interviewing at universities, that was a big thing I was looking for, was what's the ability to actually interact with industry. And so NC State was just the perfect place because we're surrounded by industry.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you're interacting with industry today?
Yeah, so Real Search says that we do apply our research in a real setting. So our motto is real engineers, real practices, real impact, because we want to have an impact on industry. And so all of my students ultimately have to apply their research in an industrial setting. And so we're all motivated to, interact with people right up front to make sure that what they're working on is salient. I mean, if we try to get a research partner to help us with the research and no one's interested, then that probably tells us we shouldn't even be doing it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then, from then on, we do interact with, potentially multiple companies on a single research idea to apply what we're doing in their setting.
I think that's a pretty rare thing in academia these days. And I'm wondering whether everybody's trying to copy you or, kind of what the level of interest among your peers in academia is in that model.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that there's definitely, I think, an element of jealousy in the ability that we have to do that. But it's really not something everyone can do. I mean, they really have to have companies all around them in order to be able to do it.
Right.
That's why I'm here at NC State.
Well, I think you have to have companies, and you also have to have ideas that are kind of relevant to the commercial space.
Right, right.
Both of those things.
Exactly. And I think that interacting with industry gives you the ideas. So, when we go out and we talk to industry in the first place, then we're hearing what kind of problems they're having, which spurs research ideas, mm-hmm. which then we validate to make sure they're really salient research ideas.
Very nice. So you're also an Agile superstar, and I'm not sure what the uptake of Agile has been in the commercial world, but it certainly gets a lot of airplay out there.
Yeah, I think that, I've been involved with Agile for almost 10 years now, since I was doing my PhD. And I think that there was a big transition that took place. Back in the early days, there were like religious wars of Agile versus what I'll say plan-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I don't think I can go to a company that doesn't say something about Agile in some way.
They just think that sounds cool and they want to be fast.
No, I don't think so, actually. I think that what they've done is picked, okay, we're not going to do the whole thing, but we're going to do this iteration thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to do test-driven development. So they've determined what of Agile they're willing to adopt in their environment,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing that without going wholesale.
And Agile is certainly amenable to that sort of partial adoption, too.
Definitely, yep. Definitely, yeah.
So I think we first interacted at the conference you founded, XP Universe, in 2003.
Right.
And I think if I remember this right, I slammed Agile at some conference at NCSU.
No,
that
in
was
your
on
book.
Security requirements, right?
You wrote it in your book.
I did write it in my book eventually, but that was after the thing at XP Universe.
Right.
So I think you asked me to come down and do a keynote, and I guess wanted to get me killed or something. I don't know.
Not intentionally, no.
So I gave a talk called XP and Software Security. You got to be kidding. So let's talk about that. And one of the things that you just mentioned was this test first or test driven design.
Right.
So how important is that to Agile?
So you can definitely be Agile without doing test driven development. But when I talk to companies, I say there's really two aspects of Agile.
Mm-hmm.
One is, you know, I'll say the project management aspect, you know, doing iterations, having a feature backlog, picking your features, you know, at the beginning of each iteration based on what the customer wants
mm-hmm.
in the last month or the last week.
And lots of customer feedback.
Right. And so that, well, the customer feedback probably goes into the other half, which what I would say is the quality half. And so, you know, the project management part can make you more productive and things like that. But then the quality half are some practices that help you also get good quality.
Right.
And the customer feedback helps you get good quality. Test-driven development definitely has an impact on quality.
I think it does, too. And I think it's great for features especially. So it keeps you focused on the thing you're supposed to be focused on, getting the stuff to work.
Right.
But I'm worried about what happens to non-functional requirements like security or performance or reliability. Can you say a little bit about that?
So in the test-driven development kind of setting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're right that they could be forgotten. And then, so there are, you know, I'll say research efforts focused on, so we did a study on performance and test-driven development
mm-hmm.
With IBM where, you know, they incorporated performance test cases throughout and showed that even though they redid device drivers in Java rather than C and C++, that the Java device drivers were faster than the C and C++ drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And they attributed that to the fact that they were writing performance test cases throughout.
I see. So the idea is to focus on the ility with test cases.
Right, right. But, you know, you have to have the right focus.
Right.
Because in Agile, you know, Agile's very functional requirement oriented.
Yes.
And so you have to have someone in there, you know, essentially keeping everyone honest and
right.
making sure that security. I mean, I completely had, you know, this was a while ago, but I had a lunch with a extreme programming team at one point. And I said, so, you know, what about security? And they said, if you want security, write a security card.
Well, as long as it doesn't devolve to, if you want security, throw some crypto at it.
Yeah.
You'd be all right.
Yeah.
So what do you think that Agile can learn from software security, which you're also pretty involved in?
So I don't know. Like when I deal with Agile teams, I try to get them to be, you know, considering security all along. And actually, I started a project with an Agile team just a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so Agile has this effort estimation practice called planning poker. And planning poker is a way to come up with how big is this requirement. And it's a Delphi method. So there's voting that takes place, and then the highs and lows explain why they're high and low, and
mm-hmm.
try to, you know, change people's perspectives on how much effort it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good learning experience. You know, people learn about the requirements. Potentially, the requirements are changed on the spot if it's determined that they're bigger than their value.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started working with the company doing what we call protection poker.
Aha.
And so
yeah, I saw your paper on that.
Yeah. So it focuses on the security aspects of every requirement. So it is like a requirements-based risk assessment that goes on, not the whole architecture of the system. But so what we talk about is, okay, this is a new requirement that is coming in this iteration. What are the security implications of this requirement?
Right.
And we've only done it, we had a tutorial, but and then we've done one live session with the company. And it was just amazing the kind of conversations that took place. You know, on the spot, some requirements, you know, they added some tasks to requirements to make sure that there was logging or making sure that, there was no cross-site scripting. You know, so they specifically put tasks in the requirement mm-hmm. because of the conversation that we were having.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said both of those things, because logging is a thing, right? But cross-site yeah. scripting is a problem.
Right, you know, but preventing cross-site scripting is a task.
Yep, and that's very good, because in some sense, it's not a functional requirement.
Right, right.
So so what do you think that software security can learn from Agile, you know, as a discipline?
So, you know, I don't think that software security and Agile are mutually exclusive.
Oh, no, neither do I.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that there's no reason that you can't be Agile and be building security into your application at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say. That I'd say that they can learn from each other.
We'll rejoin our interview with Lori Williams after this message. Hi, Silver Bullet listeners. Over the last 3 years, some of you have asked for more interviews focused on practitioners. We recently created the Reality Check podcast with Gary McGraw to focus on practical software security. In the series, we'll be interviewing people involved in running large-scale software security initiatives. Our first victim is Steve Lipner, who runs Microsoft's SDL team. Check us out on the web at www.sigital.com/realitycheck. This is Gary McGraw. So I like to make a distinction between security testing, by which I mean white box, kind of QA-driven coverage analysis, regression testing, that sort of thing that you're very familiar with, and penetration testing, which is kind of black box, outside in, often done blind mm-hmm. By people with metal in their face. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that making a distinction between security testing and penetration testing like that makes sense?
I think it does, because, you know, by the time you get to penetration testing, you know, you're so far along in the project mm-hmm. that it's hard to fix the security problems, where the other kinds of testing you're talking about can be done earlier in the process
yep.
and fix things earlier.
Mm-hmm. I think they're sort of often done by different types of people, too. You know, although I do have another question, which is, how in the heck can you teach testers the attacker's perspective?
Well, I know that you feel this way too, that, I mean, so I, from a student standpoint and, you know, some limited industrial experience, people get really excited about thinking like an attacker.
Oh, they do, absolutely.
Yeah. And
but
so
that doesn't mean they can do it.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, part of this protection poker thing that we're doing is to enlighten, so someone in the room, just someone in the room has to say, oh, so-and-so really wants this data. You know, and then everyone in the room is enlightened, you know, to how to think like an adversary.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah.
So having a group in that effort really helps.
Right. So getting a diversity of opinions about the item. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I find that, you know, one of the problems is people who build stuff for a living, like developers and testers, are very optimistic people.
mm-hmm.
You know, and they have a hard time thinking about the worst possible thing, or they look at you if you suggest a crazy attack like you just killed their puppy, you know, which is an interesting thing to try to counter. So I think we're still trying to figure out how to teach testers the attacker's perspective, or how much of that can be instilled.
Yeah, I think that testers are, you know, because people with the testing mindset are always trying to do the wrong thing. I think it's the developers that
I think
are
good ones
challenge.
Are. I would agree with you. You know, sometimes testers focus too much attention on the functional alone and don't even look at, say, boundary conditions or corner cases.
Yeah.
But all good testers do the latter.
Right, right.
So,
and I think it depends, too. Like, some organizations, the developers are the testers,
mm-hmm.
And that's a tougher one.
Uh-huh.
People who are really testers tend to think deviously, I think.
Right, right. Interesting. So by all accounts, you're an outstanding teacher and educator. So you won an award in 2006 from the computer science students in the department. How do we go about teaching security or any illity for that matter, in today's kind of computer science environment?
Well, I know that, you know, when I think about myself, you know, I teach software engineering, and, you know, the course is packed. And so students do get excited about security, and so in many ways, you know, I can only give them a brief introduction. You know, I can't do it justice, but when I give them extra credit related to security, they're all very excited to do that. And so I do that quite often. I had a software testing reliability class with quite a big security module in it, and in the fall, this fall, I'll be starting a new software security course.
Oh, cool.
So I'm excited about that. But like I said, people, I mean, security is just something that people get energized about.
Do you use that as bait to attract students to get interested in software engineering?
Yeah, they definitely do. There's no doubt about it.
Very cool.
So the main constraint, I think, is just time.
Uh-huh.
Time in the curriculum.
Yeah, so if you had your druthers and you could make any changes you wanted to the standard CS curriculum to better prepare students for work, say, out in corporate technology, what would you do?
Ah, that's a good question. So I think that, you know, people who have software engineering curriculum have a lot more time, where computer science curriculum, you know, there's more theory and things like that that are done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there could be two tracks. And depending on, like, if you're going to go out and be a software engineer building software, that maybe you could be freed up of some of the fundamentals. I think fundamentals are important, but there's just so much time in a curriculum, which is the biggest problem.
Yeah, right. Yep, that is a problem. I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of security people say, oh, well, you should just add security courses. And so then you turn it around and you say, so what would you remove? Compilers?
Right.
And then they go, right. Oh, right, you got to make space for it.
Yeah, that's the problem. And so, like, the course that I'm teaching, I specifically want it to be what we call a 500-level class, which makes it available to both advanced undergrads as well as grads.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, you know, it's not just a graduate-level topic.
Right.
But yet it's an elective. So they can choose gaming or they can choose software security.
There you go. So your current student herd checks in at 8, including PhD student Michael Gagic, who worked as an intern at Sigil, so shout out to Michael there. and your group is very tight because I visited you a couple times, and it's always fun to sit around with the entire group.
Great.
And you've placed students at UVA and Microsoft Research and EMC and IBM and lots of cool places. So tell an interesting story about one of your students that you're particularly proud of.
Well, I guess, you know, the student who's been out the longest is Nachi Nagapan at Microsoft Research. And what's interesting about Nachi is that he brought to Microsoft Research a focus on metrics, which, you know, you would think that they would have been studying metrics before, but they really weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So he's done, you know, he just has so much work to do. Like, you know, they have all kinds of prediction that they want him to do and you know, help out with their reliability problems and not so much security so far, but I think he's had a big, big impact on Microsoft in a pretty short period of time.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah.
So you wrote this paper called "Is Complexity Really the Enemy of Software Security?"
Right.
With Yonghee Shin.
Right.
And you took on one of my Trinity of Trouble factors. The Trinity of Trouble is complexity and something's networked and extensibility.
Right.
And I think what you guys did is correlate complexity measures with security problems.
Right.
So can you explain your results a little bit?
Yeah, so far, and so Yonghee, you know, that's, you know, you've given her the challenge for her whole PhD topic. And so she's in a journey. And the first step in her journey was to examine cyclomatic complexity. And so what she did was she examined a number of different cyclomatic complexity metrics and the presence of software vulnerabilities in the files.
And found only weak correlations?
Yeah, it was a weak correlation. And so when she presented this work to a statistics professor as part of a review, you know, his assessment was there is a relationship,
right?
But there are other factors as well,
right?
And so
maybe it's the other two in the Trinity of Trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Just,
you know,
kidding.
No, but I mean seriously, there. You know, but he was, you know, saying there is, you know, you may want your correlation to be higher, but there is something going on there.
Right.
But she's examining other currently right now on working with some other projects and expanding from cyclomatic complexity to things like coupling and cohesion.
Right.
Still finding some weak correlations, and so the next step is to do a grounded theory analysis. So look at the vulnerabilities and say, okay, what caused this? What was the fix here?
Right.
And then see if she can come up with some different complexity metrics related to security.
I think that's a beautiful piece of work. I really like it a lot. And I don't know if you listened to the Silver Bullet episode with Adam Shostak, where he was bemoaning kind of the lack of measurement in science and, for God's sakes, let's just look at the data.
I think
he's smiling right now because you know, even though McCabe complexity is probably too syntactic to get to what some of us mean by complexity, it is a start.
Right.
And the notion of finding a real complexity metric is a very, very good one.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Cool. So for the last topic, this has absolutely nothing to do with Agile or software security or anything. One of my favorite CDs of the year is Bon Iver's CD for Emma Forever. And I was wondering if you have a favorite CD for 2008 to recommend for people to buy at the end of the year.
So this is a music CD.
Sure. No, it doesn't have to be. It could be whatever you want.
So if it's any kind of CD, I know that, you know, I having kids and dealing with a career, I'm always listening to things in the car. Mm-hmm. And so I listen to books on CDs all the time when I'm driving. And so a current favorite is called The Law of Attraction, which focuses on, like, setting goals and making sure that you always stop yourself from thinking negative thoughts and, you know, making sure you're always headed in the right direction. And I like listening to things like that because life brings you challenges all the time. So you constantly need reminders, like, you know, don't think about that. Think about this other thing that you want to happen.
Right.
And so, yeah.
So that's your recommendation?
Yeah, that's my recommendation.
That sounds good. And then the most important question of all, are you ever coming to a solstice party or what?
June.
Now it's recorded. Thousands of people are hearing this.
I'm sure I would have a great time when I get there.
Thanks a lot. It's been fun. This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Inform IT. The November-December 2008 issue of IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine is a special issue about process control and SCADA security. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.